You can meet and hear 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, journalist Mark and Molly Hemingway, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, Chris Roseborough of Fighting for the Faith, and Pastor Brian Wolfmiller of Has American Christianity Failed at the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference. The premier conference for Christian laity is Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more and register at issuesetc.org.
In the case of the president, do you get a sense that his regular attendance and adherence to the faith resonates with American Catholics?
There is a phrase, a cafeteria Catholic. You choose that which is attractive and dismiss that which is challenging.
We are entering a post-Christian era. We are not going to be able to live off of the inheritance of a Christianity that is being rejected and is being slewed off right now.
There were specific strategies that the church used in many churches to grow the congregations that focused less on discipleship and biblical fidelity and even biblical literacy. And I think that that has produced a large amount of people in our churches that might not even really be Christians.
Easter is a time of triumph and joy. Easter is a time when we can rejoice together that Jesus has conquered death by his death.
I love listening to Issues Etc. while riding my bike on the street of Beijing, China.
We have been talking about this subject for more than a decade, the exploitation of women in the name of in vitro fertilization or big fertility. Along with that, a relatively new trend, surrogacy. Surrogacy seems on the outside like an altruistic action, but actually it's many times just big business too. Greetings and welcome to Issues Etc. live on this Friday afternoon, April the 12th. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for tuning us in. Katie Faust is going to join us to talk about an international conference on surrogacy. Pastor Jonathan Connor joins us for part 24 of our series, Kids Have Questions, and then we'll discuss the limited atonement with Dr. Jordan Cooper of Just and Sinner. Katie Faust is a regular guest, a married mother of four children in Seattle, founder and director of the children's rights organization Them Before Us, co-author of the new book Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City, Teaching Historical, Economic, and Biological Truth in a World of Lies, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Experts Fight Surrogacy's Human Rights Abuses at Global Conference. Katie, welcome back.
Thanks again for having me, Todd. Always a joy to join you.
What were you doing in Rome recently?
Well, I was with a variety of experts from five different continents who were all assembled to condemn surrogacy and seek a global ban on the practice. Our members included Catholics, Protestants, feminists, Marxists, men, women. I mean, it was quite an eclectic group, but all of us agreed that surrogacy is a human rights violation against women and children. And so that is what unified us in our effort and in our meetings.
What is the Casablanca Declaration?
So the Casablanca Declaration is an effort originally signed last year by 75 experts, of which I am one, seeking a global ban on surrogacy and the criminalization on people who use it. So we're not seeking for it to be regulated. We want it to be completely banned. There is no way to do this. There's no way to execute this practice in any form that does not commodify women and treat children as designer products. So that is what it is. It is a coalition of experts from across the globe who are unequivocally, emphatically saying this needs to be banned, not just for one country, but for all countries.
Who is Olivia Morrill and what was her story?
So Olivia has emerged over the last 6 or 8 months as one of the most credible and important voices condemning surrogacy. She is a woman in her 30s who lives in France. She's a mother of three. And she, as she was growing up in a very, very wealthy household, splitting time between a chalet in France and a home in Florida, she always felt like something was off in her life. She never felt connected to her mother, always had incredible separation anxiety and panics when her parents weren't around. She sensed that something was off, but didn't know until the last few years that she had been born of what is called traditional surrogacy, which is where the birth mother is the same as the genetic mother. And she was separated from that mother at birth through a commercial contract. So she was able to put her finger on that as the reason why she had so many mental health issues in her teen years and early adulthood, including substance abuse issues and high rates of depression and anxiety. So she would say that that fundamental separation, that transaction that separated her from her birth mother, is really the root cause of so many of the psychological issues that she battled with throughout her life. So she's come out as a major voice condemning surrogacy in all forms. And she shared her story not only at the Casablanca conference, but she was able to talk directly with the Pope while she was in Rome. And she has received quite a bit of news coverage in a variety of different outlets in several different countries, and deservedly so, because she is one of the very, very few children created through this novel technology that is both old enough and bold enough, willing to accept the high personal cost of speaking out and criticizing the decisions that her parents made when she was very young.
Talk about that, how there are others that do have this exactly the same experiences, but don't want to speak out at this time.
Well, she told me that she is in contact with several other surrogate-born children who have experienced challenges, distress, hardship, but it's hard for them to speak out about it because if they were to talk about how they were damaged through this process or through the circumstances or the household arrangements that followed this contract for a pregnancy, what's at stake for them? Well, they lose the primary relationship, sometimes the biggest relationships, maybe the only relationships that they have in their life. And that's something that Olivia has experienced. She's very honestly, but respectfully, of her mother and father that raised her, but they've cut her off. So it's very high stakes for these kids if they want to speak out against this practice. What we do at Them Before Us, my children's rights nonprofit, is we catalog the stories of children who have been subject to mother or father loss from divorce or abandonment or reproductive technologies. And many of those kids feel the exact same way. Speaking up and sharing their story means putting at risk the relationship with their mother, father, sometimes their siblings. And so it's just very rare for somebody who is willing to speak up and be honest and publicly talk about the harms that they experienced because of their mother or father loss. So there's so few children born of surrogacy, and the ones that have been are overwhelmingly young at this point because it's just becoming more trendy now. So there will be others, but right now Olivia is speaking for all of them.
So you talked about traditional surrogacy. What is surrogacy and how does it in particular harm those who are involved in it?
Well, if you're talking to fertility lawyer, fertility doctor, or a fertility clinic, or a surrogate agent, they're going to explain that there's a couple different forms of surrogacy. One of them is traditional surrogacy, and that is where the birth mother is also the genetic mother, which is just the same thing as all of us mothers. It would be like giving away the child that is 100% ours, that we are genetically related to, gave birth to, but we would just be contractually selling them. So that's traditional surrogacy. Gestational surrogacy is where a woman is pregnant with donor eggs and maybe the sperm of the husband or maybe not, but she's not genetically related to the child. So the surrogacy industry will separate those surrogacy into those two categories. But you can also think about it as the distinction between commercial surrogacy, where the woman is paid, and altruistic surrogacy, where she does it for free. So that's how the world of adults thinks about surrogacy and separates it. But when you're looking at it from the perspective of the child, the way the child looks at it is the separation of what should be one woman, mother, into three purchasable and optional women. Number one, the genetic mother who provides her egg that you can shop for by scrolling or Googling first egg donor catalog. Number two is the birth mother who carries the child through the first 9.5 months and is inseparable from the baby for the first critical season of development. And number three is the social mother, the woman that provides that distinct female love that children crave and developmentally benefit from all their life. And so what surrogacy does is it allows you to separate that woman into three and then mix and match, rent or purchase whatever one of those women that you need or want to contract for. So surrogate-born children always lose their birth mother. They often also lose their genetic mother, and sometimes they go home to a home that does not have a mother in it at all. So sometimes they lose all three. So the world can sort of dress up and sterilize and minimize the loss of surrogacy using these words like altruistic or commercial or gestational or traditional. But in all of these cases, it's the child's experiencing some level of mother loss.
Why have many European countries banned surrogacy altogether?
Europe is pretty united on this front, that it's largely illegal to contract for surrogacy in most European countries. And that has been established mostly on the basis of the exploitation of women, because feminists, even though they are not of one mind, there's a large contingent of feminists who see this properly as the exploitation of economically vulnerable women. And Exhibit A is the fact that surrogacy, 25% of the global marketplace for surrogacy right now is in Ukraine, where women are incredibly economically vulnerable. So that is the reasoning behind most of the European ban on surrogacy. From my perspective, the children's rights perspective, I think that there's a much stronger case to be made on the basis that children are objectified and commodified through this process of surrogacy. And so I think that there's holes in the argument when it comes to the feminist perspective, but the argument that children are always forced to sacrifice something that they need, long for, deserve, and have a right to through surrogacy is an airtight case. So I'm hoping to bring in that aspect of the argument and further fortify a lot of these European countries and a lot of other countries throughout the world that are dabbling in or considering or trying to fight against big fertility.
Katie Faust is our guest. She's founder and director of the children's rights organization Them Before Us. On the other side, we'll talk about big fertility and how it preys upon economically vulnerable women.
This is Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Join me, my husband Mark of Real Clear Investigations, 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, and others for the 2024 Making the Case Conference, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Learn more at issuesetc.org. Making the Case, July 12th and 13th in Chicago. issuesetc.org.
What is chastity? Chastity can be defined, says Stephanie Neugebauer, as submitting the whole self, particularly one's sexual self, to God's good design and purposes. If you want to learn more about what it means to be chaste, to live a chaste and decent life, pick up your copy of the April issue of the Lutheran Witness, in which we discuss chaste community. Visit cph.org/witness to order a copy, or visit witness.lcms.org to learn more. The Lutheran Witness, helping you interpret the world from a Lutheran perspective.
Essential exercise for the Christian mind. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Pastor Matthew Harrison, president of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. The LCMS operates the second largest parochial school system in the United States. What can you expect from a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school? There's one race, the human race. And Jesus died for the sins of every man, woman, and child from every land and every nation. Life begins at conception. All life is precious from womb to tomb. And every student, parent, and teacher is created in the very image of God. There's right and wrong, and we know which is which from the Ten Commandments. There are only two sexes, male and female, He created them. Marriage is the lifelong union of one man and one woman. There's such a thing as objective, absolute truth, and it's found in the person and work of Jesus Christ and His Word. To find a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod school near you, visit lcms.org schools.
Folks, it's been less than 4 weeks, and the 2024 Issues Etc. Making the Case conference is already half full. Attendance is limited to 500. Making the Case is your opportunity to meet and hear journalists Mark and Molly Hemingway, 12-time All-American swimmer Riley Gaines, Aaron Wren of the American Conservative, pastors Chris Roseborough, Brian Wolfmiller, and Will Wheaton. The early bird registration fee is $140. That includes meals on Friday night and Saturday afternoon and evening. Affordable on-campus dorm options are available. For more information, visit issuesetc.org or call 618-223-8385. The premier conference for Christian laity, Making the Case, Friday, July 12th and Saturday, July 13th at Concordia University, Chicago. Katie, talk a little bit more about how big fertility preys upon economically vulnerable women.
Well, it's clear, you know, anytime you're reading a story about a surrogate pregnancy, you're going to be reading about somebody that is economically well off or maybe a celebrity. You're never going to see the story of a celebrity that is being the surrogate for a garbage man or a housekeeper. It's always going to be the other way around. As Jennifer Law often says, in surrogacy, the rich buy and the poor sell. And so this really is a marketplace where the economically vulnerable are going to be renting out their services or selling their services to the economically well off. And so there's absolutely a power imbalance going on here. And we've seen at Big Fertility move into countries where there are higher populations of women who are more in need of financial assistance, places like Cambodia or Thailand or India or Nepal. And they sweep in and they set up shop. And very quickly, those countries realize, wait a second, our women are being exploited. These children are being purchased and trafficked. And very often, trafficking rings will be set up in conjunction to the surrogacy industry. And so a lot of these countries will have their doors wide open for surrogacy for the first couple years, because it looks like a benign way to just help people have families. Very, very quickly, these governments realize, wait a second, our women are actually being completely exploited through this process. And a lot of these countries then end up shutting their doors after a couple years. So the fact that surrogacy exploits vulnerable women is a very, very easy case to make, and one that is the grounds on which a lot of countries have banned it completely.
What does it mean that surrogacy is regulated in the U.S.?
Well, that's something that we fight against at Them Before Us an awful lot. Whenever you're passing commercial surrogacy laws, it's in the name of regulating this so that everybody is protected by a contract and all the rules are well established and we know exactly who the baby is going to go to and how they're going to get there and who's the parents going to be at the very end of this process. But those regulations don't actually protect the women or the babies. They protect the buyers. They protect the lawyers. They protect the fertility doctors. And there's no way to protect a woman and the children who are the subject to these contracts. When something goes wrong, it's never the surrogate or the child that is protected. It's always the buyers. It's always the doctors that are protected by these quote-unquote regulations. And that's why the Casablanca Declaration is seeking to ban the practice. There's no way to regulate this in a way that actually leads to justice for women and especially justice for children. It is a marketplace of human beings, and that is not something that you can regulate. It is something, as we learned in the Civil War, that needs to be fought with all our might.
You had mentioned altruistic surrogacy. What about that?
Well, I think that that's where a lot of us kind-hearted, baby-loving, conservative or Christian people get really tripped up. Because in our mind, surrogacy is just a sister offering to carry a pregnancy for her sister who had some kind of medical emergency or cancer or had to have her uterus removed or something like that. And in our world, it's just one sweet woman helping a relative or a friend. But the reality is those cases are extremely rare. Altruistic surrogacy has been legal in places like New York, in places like Michigan for decades. But both of those states have recently passed commercial surrogacy laws because there's not enough women that are willing to offer up their womb for free in what is always a high-risk pregnancy. And so we have this sort of noble myth about the woman who's going to do this for free out of the goodness of her heart, but that's extremely rare. And because there is a huge demand for children, this is a marketplace, there is a demand for children that's outstripping supply, the way that they're going to increase the supply of wombs available for these contract pregnancies is to pay them, and often pay them a lot of money. Even in the countries where supposedly commercial surrogacy is illegal, but altruistic surrogacy is permitted, like Canada or the UK, you still have high, high rates of expenses that are being given to the surrogates for all kinds of things that can number in the tens of thousands of dollars. So the reality is women are being paid to contract out their womb, to export a designer child to adults who are often unrelated to the baby, and take the child across state borders or international borders into houses and homes that have never, unlike adoption, been viewed or regulated or known by social workers, to disappear into whatever kind of fate that those intended, often unrelated parents have for them. Some of them, I'm sure, will treat them as beloved children, but we have documented cases of child predators who have acquired children through surrogacy, men who never would have passed adoption background screenings. So there's just a lot of myths around surrogacy that we as Christians and we as people who care about the rights and well-being of children need to get wise to and oppose, because we are moving into an era where it's just going to get more dystopic for children through reproductive technologies. And so we have to figure out how to stand against the current threats so that we can fight against the future threats.
What would you say to a couple listening to us who are considering surrogacy?
Well, you're probably dealing with incredible burdens in terms of infertility or longing for a child that you have not been able to achieve naturally. And so my heart goes out to you. But especially if you consider yourself a Christian, it's absolutely antithetical to the biblical worldview to force children to sacrifice for us. There's just nothing in the pages of Scripture, Old Testament or New Testament, that says that the weak should sacrifice for the strong. But that's what surrogacy is. It's always children sacrificing on behalf of adults. It's always children doing hard things so adults can have what they want. Sometimes what they want is good and noble, but the means of getting that belonging cannot be the expense or the rights of the well-being of the least of the most vulnerable among us. So I would say you've got to resolve that longing to have children in a way that does not force the most vulnerable to sacrifice for you.
Katie Faust is a married mother of four children in Seattle, founder and director of the children's rights organization Them Before Us. She's co-author of the new book, Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City, Teaching Historical, Economic, and Biological Truth in a World of Lies, and a recent column for The Federalist titled Experts Fight Surrogacy's Human Rights Abuses at Global Conference. You can read this column and purchase Raising Conservative Kids in a Woke City at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Talk On Demand Archives. Katie, thank you.
Thanks for having me.
When we come back, our series Kids Have Questions continues with Pastor Jonathan Connor.
Throughout the 50 days of Easter, sacred music for the world. LutheranPublicRadio.org. Listen 24/7 to sacred music for the Easter season. LPR, LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Memoria Press's award-winning curriculum is used by homeschoolers all over the world. Their classical Christian education materials provide everything you need for kindergarten through 12th grade, including books, guides, lesson plans, and instructional videos. If you're interested in learning more, visit them at memoriapress.com and use the coupon code LPR24 at checkout. Memoria Press, saving Western civilization one student at a time.
If you continue in my word, you are truly my disciples, and you will know the truth, and the truth will make you free.
Dr. Russell Dawn, president of Concordia University, Chicago.
Indeed, the quest for truth is at the core of a university's purpose. The liberal arts, illuminated by the revealed truths of Scripture, are powerful for equipping students for a life of self-governance. A disciple is one who follows the Master. So what does it mean to follow Jesus? He said that it means to take up one's cross. The cross is thus the symbol of dying for others, of dying to self for the sake of serving others. And a life of service is a life well lived.
Truth, Freedom, Vocation. Concordia University, Chicago. CUChicago.edu. We're supported by listeners like you. You're listening to Issues Etc.
The difference of a biblical worldview. This is Ken Ham with a passion for equipping the church with answers from God's Word. We live in a culture of death that views the wishes of adults as more important than the lives of children. As we saw yesterday, the adult desire to have a healthy or able-bodied child is considered more important than the well-being of a human life. For example, with reproductive technologies, babies who are deemed unfit or undesirable are usually discarded like medical waste. But what a difference when we start with a biblical worldview. In that view, we're made in the very image of God, fearfully and wonderfully, made not as commodities to be chosen or discarded, but as precious persons, human beings, knitted together and loved by Him.
You can discover more about the sanctity of every human life at AnswersRadio.com. Be encouraged with truth at AnswersRadio.com.